It's Tuesday, December 3rd, 2013, and you're listening to episode 322 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 32 minutes.
Hello and welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Pat.
My name is John.
This is Beth.
My name's Chad.
So we're having a good time tonight, are we? I like it. I just recorded an episode with Brodeur, which was interesting. I start off by saying it's going to be interesting because apparently there are going to be people that think that there's two Pats and they're not going to be able to tell the difference.
Dude,
between the
he
two
sounds
of us.
So much like you.
That's what I've heard. And I listened to the episode that he was on and I heard it in a couple places, like not all the time, but there are a couple times where it's like, yeah, he sounds just like me. That's creepy.
Yeah, baby, there's only one you.
Oh, I that's true.
Whoa.
Yes.
Oh, wait, you're married. That's okay. See, no, that's creepy. No, it's creepy.
No, that was creepy. I'm contractually obligated to say that.
That's right.
It's
by
in the marriage
law.
Bell.
That's right. I wrote that contract.
That
Why
is
don't
true.
You game master, Pat? What's your problem?
Yeah, Pat.
Your wife is game.
I am actually I'm considering. Actually, I think I've committed to doing
He's been sucked in.
A very limited a Pathfinder. I'm gonna run Pathfinder.
Awesome.
But it's gonna be like maybe like a once a month, and it's more gonna be like okay, we've played the last 3 weeks, whatever we're playing. Next week I'm gonna run the next session of Pathfinder. And it's gonna be the reason for it is that Wayne still wants to experience a like an old school sort of D&D game. And for me, that's Pathfinder. If I'm not gonna run second edition or whatever, or even third edition, but I think you know Pathfinder's good.
Yeah,
so
yeah, it's pretty old school.
And so I'm gonna put that together. So I've gotta work on it. I haven't started working on it yet because it's end of the year. And the end of the year sucks for everybody, I'm sure, but it's especially hectic for me at work right now. So, like, I don't have any time to think about anything at the moment, but maybe, like, over Christmas break, I'm also going to talk to my original DM that I talk about all the time, because we'll see him as we go down for Thanksgiving and also for Christmas, and I'm going to have him help me come up with some ideas or whatever, and he can help sort of funnel me some stuff, too, so that'll be good.
Pathfinder.
Oh,
exactly. Pathfinder.
Nice.
Yes.
Pathfinder is coming.
So, by Eric Mona.
So, yes, so I am going to do some more GMing.
He got sucked in.
Yeah, it happens.
Everyone should GM. If you don't GM, you're a weakling.
Yes.
See, I only gave myself a C. I don't think I did a very good job.
People are awful at self-evaluating their GMs. C.S. Lewis said something about the righteous
amazing
who thought they were terrible and
Damn.
The damned who thought they were just totally cool. And that's how it is with GMs.
I'm a really good GM.
Well, then you probably suck. No, that's not true. I've played your games for like 12 years and I've loved all of them. You're
Thank
really
you.
Good.
Thank you.
You're cracking me up. I'm awesome.
I am awesome.
I'm so great.
I'm really smart and handsome, too.
And modest.
Yes.
It's amazing.
It is.
No, seriously, I give myself a C because I felt like half the time everybody just sat and looked at me and I went,
well, when you're GMing, everyone sits and looks at you.
I know.
That's a good thing.
No, it's
I
not.
I sit and look at you when you're not GMing.
Oh.
Huh. So let's cut in to a more psychological question here.
Okay.
Not like I'm going to GM this at a later date or I gave myself a bad grade and I don't think that I did good or I'm just really awesome at GMing. But
that is pretty much the wrap up of what we've got so far.
Yeah, that's our good. Whole episode so far.
I'm average. Pat's not good and Chad is awesome.
Damn, what can I say?
And I'm transcendent.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's a big word.
Well, let me ask you guys this question. Why do you GM, not a story of how you came to GM or that you're planning to GM, why do you GM and then why don't you GM? And not just Pat, because Pat's not a regular GM, but I mean, what are the reasons why you don't?
Lazy.
Well, let's start out. Why do you GM? Because that's really, I think that's the harder question.
The only reason why I thought about GMing after not doing it for so long is, for one thing, everyone, i.e. John, kept telling me that I needed to.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm a motivational factor.
Well, when I mentioned...
I'm just a fly in the ointment, pain in the ass.
Well, no, when I mentioned that I thought I might want to, Chad immediately ratted me out to you, and you began texting me saying, do it!
That was a coincidence. My sentiment of encouraging the joy of GMing upon all just happened to bubble up 5 minutes after Chad brought it up.
Yeah. Yes.
And did not ask me to back him up.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. I know, right?
That's some amazing
timing.
That's because
there's magic.
Well, and then I had a story I wanted to tell, which I'm told is the wrong thing to do.
Hmm.
It's wrong-ish. It's not totally wrong. If you have a setting you want to tell, you should GM. If you have a narrative story that you've all plotted out, you shouldn't GM.
No.
You should open up Notepad and click on word wrap and then write it until you're done.
Fair enough. But fell somewhere towards the middle of that, and that's the reason why I gave myself a C. There was a ton of stuff that you guys never found. That drives me crazy.
Well, then make
it. Welcome to the world of GMing.
I know.
Don't players are stupid.
Oh, it was behind the third rock, and they looked behind the fourth rock.
No.
Put it behind the fourth rock. That was there the whole time.
Well, what you ran into, Beth, and the reason that it didn't come out is because we played two sessions, and then we were done with it.
You had
what you're
talking
about.
Months of campaign of material
in 2 days.
Exactly. In 2 days. That was the problem.
And it's something that easily could have come out if we play it more. And if we do continue with more, there's no reason that we couldn't. So that's the thing. So it's very unfair of you to try to judge yourself on the fact that, like you're saying, you had so much material that you're trying to come out in two sessions. It's just that's not going to happen. Any GM can tell you. I can even tell you that, and I've only GM'd a little bit in my career. That's just not how it works. So that's fixable. I mean, that's nothing to worry about.
So, Beth, though, getting back to the question, why you GM? Peer pressure.
Part of it was peer pressure.
Okay. I don't find anything wrong with that.
Good, because you were part of the peer pressure.
Yes. Yes, I am a bully. But...
But you're so good at
bully.
It.
I am. I do it with style.
Panache.
I'm a really good bully and I'm a really good GM.
I know. But you're awesome.
I know. I'm the total package. Yeah, I am.
Total package.
Damn. Being bullied is just part of the problem because in the end, I bullied Pat and Pat's like, I'm not GMing this damn game.
Exactly.
You have to have the initial interest. Like I said, I had...
interests you in GMing?
I had a setting and a kind of a story and things that were going on that I thought would be fun to share and an inherent need to be the center of attention.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Okay. Interesting.
I read the Stanford Prison Experiment and I was like, I want to be a guard. I want everyone to play pretend and be subjected to my every narrative whim.
Okay, John. Why do you GM?
Okay, obviously not for that reason. Yeah.
Maybe a little.
I started GMing because I was the one who bought the red box and like obviously was going to have an easier time playing D&D if I was the GM than if I was just asking random friends in fifth grade to learn how to GM and then run for me. From there, it's just kind of rolled. Like, I have fun writing settings and playing villains and setting it up for my friends and watching them have fun playing through it.
Well, how about you, Chad?
Who can tell you why?
Well, how I started GMing was out of necessity. I lost my old group. And in my old group, I was very dedicated to not GMing. I did not want to do it. I liked playing. I only wanted to play. I saw how much work it was. Because I gamed under Dan. And what does Dan have? He has a 3-inch thick notebook full of notes. And I'm like, that's the most awful thing I've ever seen in my whole life. So I'm like, yeah, that's not what I really want to get into. And I actually ran a game for him in the old group once or twice, a couple episodes. It's pretty good. Modern fantasy sort of thing. And, you know, I did some notes and you know, filled several pages in a notebook before I even showed up. And it was good. It was interesting. And it was kind of one of those things of, I want to prove to myself that I can do it before I say I'll never do this again. Then I lost my group. Friendship divorce. You know, and there was a stuff exchange. I mean, it was a terrible friendship divorce. In the early episodes, Dan and I talk about how we had this sort of late unpleasantness. You know, we've been friends for 30 some odd years, but we had a huge fight and we didn't talk to each other for 5 years. There were friends that we had to trade. There were friends that sides were chosen and stuff was given back and stuff was lost and things were said. It was awful. All friendship divorces are awful.
Yeah.
But it ended up that I lost the group. Dan kept the group and I didn't. So I didn't have a group. But I was making other friends. One who's sitting across from me now, like John, whom I love very much.
Yay.
And I made several other friends. And we all worked together and we all partied together. And I was the oldest person in the group. And I was telling them about some of my hobbies and things that I like to do. I was telling them about gaming. And these were all nerds. And they really wanted to try this out. And at some
I knew what it was. That was how I crowbarred into the group because we all worked at the grocery store and you guys were like early.
You were a late addition.
And I was 16. Yeah. And I was like, oh, what the hell are we going to do about this kid? And he's like, well, he knows how to run D&D. well, we may as well bring him in.
Okay. I never said that. I hope that it's, I'll say something, and I hope that it's true. I never treated you like a kid.
No, never at all.
Yeah. I never
I was an immediately full vested member of that group.
Yeah.
To aww. Most people.
Yeah.
Some people were like, what is happening here? But I was just like, yeah. I don't care.
Chad, you're in your mid-20s. Why are you friends with a 17-year-old? Because he is my friend.
You know, that's what happens. And it's interesting as you get older. I think it's going to happen more and more. I think when you're younger, when you're in your teens,
yeah.
I think that age disparity is much more of a big deal.
Definitely.
You know, yeah. 2 or 3 years older, you know, within a couple of years, it's not a big deal. But you're talking like 5 or 6 years old, age difference to like a, you know, somebody in their late teens, early 20s. That's like a huge thing.
Right.
But when you get to be my age. And right. I'm hanging around with people like you who are 12 years my, at least.
What are you, Pat?
I'm 39 now.
I'm 28.
So, yeah, so you were 11 to 12-ish years the yeah. difference.
John and I are about
I don't see aging.
Yeah, no, I didn't give a damn.
I mean, I know that you're younger than I am, but at this point, you are done with school. You're right. in your professional
we're
career.
In same,
we're in the same place.
Phase of life.
Yeah, yeah. So that's when it changes. So yeah.
the thing
that's going to happen.
Back in the day when it you was know, radically different, when I was 17 and you were 26, Chad.
Yeah.
It was like,
that
we don't really care.
People's heads.
Yeah, people are like, what's up? And I'm like, I like tabletop RPG and cool people and
yes,
no tabletop
because
I
had the same thing actually with Mark,
yeah.
with Mark and Scott because back then I was still in college, so I was high school college. I was 18, 20 years old, you know, around 20-ish or so years old, and they were probably I think they were in their 30s.
They
so yeah, they were older and again, but it was like they're older than me, but our common thing is we role play, we
right.
play games, and we do other things, and we get along really well doing that, and it's like that's the common bond. So it does. It transcends age.
We're great girlfriends.
So, Pat, tell me about your Pathfinder setting. What is the locus of your campaign?
Well,
the sex gods in the land of dildos.
No. And that's the thing. I have not started it yet. So, actually, what we could do here is we could kind of throw some ideas back and forth and get me started on my road. Because all I know is that I want to do this because there is a need in our group that, you know, it's sort of to scratch an itch that hasn't really been filled yet. And that is like, Wayne wants to play
old school mini
sort of an old school Dungeons and Dragons kind of a campaign where you've got the dungeon crawls and the combat. And that's where we differ because Chad, we're playing a game that's like that now, but the difference between Chad and I is that I am all about the combat and the mechanics of the system.
Hey man, you guys have had a combat every game.
Oh, I know we have. I'm not saying that, but like for me, I am absolutely all about the old school system, like the D&D system with all the numbers and the crunch and everything like that to that level. So I like it and I enjoy it. And that's something that I know that Wayne is wanting to do that too. So I want to design something that's going to allow us to do that. And again, like I said, this is not going to be a regular campaign. This is not going to be the week to week thing. It's going to be like, we'll play one time and then we may not play it again for a month or two.
Okay. So maybe you don't even want to have a cohesive plot. Maybe you just want to have totally bite-sized, modular, instanced dungeon runs.
I think that might be better because again,
pick up and set down
because that way you don't have to worry about,
yeah.
Okay, it's been a month or more since we played. What the heck did we do?
We killed monsters and took their crap.
Exactly.
That's what we did every time.
Yes. And to make it fun, I want to be able to play with a certain, maybe even a high level of fantasy, if that's what the group size they want, and to be able to present that to them and let them experience that,
you
I think,
have
you know.
Some plot. You have to,
yes.
Even if you just retcon until your liar, liar pants on fire, you have to convince them that it all was some sort of unitary enemy and or cause. Mm-hmm.
And like I said, the good thing is that I've got my friend Phil, who was my original DM, and he will help me with this. Because I don't want to talk plot now because potentially two of the players are sitting around the table.
I don't want you to tell us secrets.
I don't have anything in mind, but that's the good thing.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, this is true. Yeah, at this point, I won't remember after the moonshine, yeah.
Are Chatterbeth going to go to the table and think like, oh man, I know the secret, but I'm gonna,
oh my God,
I'm gonna launder
we,
it. I'm gonna make
we know
it
the
look
panic
like I thought about
the main
it
bad
character.
Guy. So
yay!
When we're in round three of the big bad guy fight, we can unleash our total combo. No, let's make liqueurs.
Yay!
Exactly. Yay! They're gonna be making liqueurs, and we're going to sit down and say, "All right, Eric Okra, roll initiative."
Eric Okra, Aboleth.
Yes.
From the very scant experiences I've had with GMing, one thing that kind of surprised me: the crunch was comforting.
Really?
Oh, the crunch is a break.
Yeah.
You don't have to think about story crap when people are crunching.
You're like,
go add your numbers, kids. I'm trying to figure out what I put behind that. Door.
It's like, what do I do? I'm like, oh, look, there's a formula. Oh, yeah. Okay. Numbers. Yay.
And if you learn the challenge rating numbers, you can even balance your own encounters.
Because I'm not a not a crunchy player by any stretch of imagination. So I didn't really put a lot of crunch into my game. And that, I think, that's part of the thing that I kind of fell on, because the system that we just used it just because it was quick and easy, and there were so many things missing that I wanted, and I wanted a quick formula to be able to do it. And so they'd be like, well, can I do this? And be like, yeah, sure. Okay.
You can bog them down in totally impenetrable crunch. You just need Pathfinder.
That's
Pathfinder.
There's got to be a
medium.
In the game
of Pathfinder, you can play a Sorka Wiz who doesn't have any limitations on the spells they know and also doesn't have to memorize them.
Yes,
Chad,
exactly.
I still blame you for allowing this.
Yes.
Misform.
So, anyway. What? I don't find the crunch comforting. I don't find it intimidating necessarily because I don't run systems that I don't like.
Sure.
So, you know, if
that makes sense. Why would you?
I also don't run systems that I don't think anybody else will hate either. You know, so if I have this total story stick, really weird, esoteric system involving pudding, and everyone's going to be like... Okay, we'll do this as a one-shot just for
liqueur.
The amusement
it's
factor.
Not
for
liqueur. It's liqueur.
Just for the amusement factor, but an ongoing game, not so much. You know, I get that. You know, it's everybody's got to have
fun. But see, that was something that really surprised me because, like I said, I'm not a crunchy player by any stretch of the imagination at all. You hand me numbers and my brain just kind of goes blank and I look at Pat and go, fix this. I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, what I get... Like you said, you hit that part where it's like, oh, crunch. Oh, hey, I'm not in free fall. I get to stop. And then everything is lined out for me. That feeling for me is when I don't do anything. And what I mean by that is I have gotten the players, you know, it's like I've given them plot. I've given them story, interacting with NPCs. Maybe there's a combat. Maybe we do that. Maybe there's some reveals. And then all of a sudden I catch myself sitting there and I'm not saying anything. And I haven't said anything for like 20 minutes. And all I've been doing is I'm looking at Beth. And then Beth is saying a whole bunch of stuff. And then Beth is saying it to John. And then John is replying back to Beth. I'm looking, I'm listening to what John is saying. And then Beth says something to Pat. And Pat, he strokes his beard, yes, kind of in character. And he thinks thoughtfully about it. And he's like, but wait, there was this other thing that happened. And there's this in-character conversation. And then I catch myself. I'm like, oh, I've hated this. Is gaming nirvana is when the characters are just interacting with each other and then I don't have to do anything. And it's not we joke about the lazy GM thing. It's like, oh, well, I don't have to do anything. And that's where you want to be, is where you just don't do anything because you're lazy. That's a funny joke and stuff, but that's not really the point. The point is that the world that you've created is self-sustaining.
Yeah, it's,
and that
such
the players
awesome
are
feeling when the group
in
takes
there.
Its own legs. And
yes,
it's not just like, what do we do, GM?
Yeah, to guide us.
The last thing
us.
We tried didn't work, so we're just going to nervously laugh until you say something else. I hate that feeling.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate that. Is GMing failure there?
It's player failure.
We'll split the difference.
I think it is. I think it's a little bit of both.
I mean,
because
if you're the GM and you're just like, you come across an impenetrable wall in a white void. What do you do? Okay, that's your fault.
Yeah.
But if you're like, you're in the middle of a city that has 9 million different leads on what you want to do, and you could go this way, and you could go that way, and you could go the other way, and the people are like, well, what do we do? And then it's your fault.
There's nothing worse than you say, that guy's following you. What do you do? Nothing. What do you mean you don't do anything? Right. There's a guy following you.
There's a great blurb in Misspent Youth where he goes into setting creation. And the players in Misspent Youth have to come up with a goal for the villains. And he says, with like F-bombs throughout to provide emphasis, the players inevitably tell me that the goal of the villain is to keep everything the same. And that's just BS. The goal of the villain is to make things far worse than they are right now, or else the universe has no narrative tension and no direction. You have to make the players swim up the stream. And I think if the stream is rushing down upon them in a total sewer of crap and hit dice, they're much more motivated to act instead of just going, well, we don't do anything. It's like, okay, you don't do anything? Then the Postmaster General dies. And if you keep not doing anything, it's going to be the Surgeon General all the way up to the president. And then the dictator of the world takes over and you lose.
You don't do anything. Surprise initiative.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly like the Dungeon Master said. You want a plot twist? You're in combat now. Not even twisted.
And that is exactly what my game is going to be.
That
Chad, you're going to love it.
Was laughed at on the mics. It was good advice.
That's okay. I'll be the bard.
I agreed with everything.
What do you do,
that
Chad?
You said.
I sing and surf Facebook. You all get plus one.
Only if you sing in real life.
You don't want that.
No one wants that. Do.
Real life role play synergy bonuses are the best.
Mm-hmm.
Until someone's like, I stole your wallet, John. I'm the thief. I'm like, oh no.
Oh snap.
You get your
guess
plus
what?
Two.
Rocks fall. You die. Now, where's my rocks?
Yeah.
Yes.
Go outside.
So I saw an annoying thread on the RPG subreddit the other day, and it got me thinking because I couldn't comfortably think of either a correct answer. In-game riddles.
Yeah.
Hate them.
Should you actually answer them, or should you just make an intelligence roll because it's actually your character answering them?
Oh.
This pissed me off because that seems so cheap and crappy
to me. It is cheap.
On the other hand, when your character wants to move a boulder, you don't go outside and say, like, okay, go move a boulder.
No, it's easy. It's easy.
What's easy?
Well, the player has to give you the answer, not you give them the answer through the roll, but they can make a roll and you give them a hint.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
That would work.
Because you make an interesting point, John, because we've always found that I personally like riddles and puzzles in game. But that's me. I've always liked puzzles and spatial relation kind of things. So that's sort of my forte. And logic puzzles, I'm like, yes, please.
Put them in your Pathfinder game. Oh,
I will try because I like that.
Load your game with the crap that you love.
Yeah.
And then when all the players try and figure it out, I'll be like, I sing and Facebook.
Yes.
Actually, you know, I've actually done a complete paradigm shift on playing with phones. Uh-huh. I don't think anybody's noticed it yet, but I don't play with phones during a game. Unless the action is totally 100% off of me, as in, like, my character's wrapped up in chains, but we are in a different city and two characters are talking about it and how are we going to rescue Chad, and I have nothing, zero. I shouldn't add anything. Like, if I add anything, I'll break something.
Immersion.
Yeah, immersion. Then I might check my email, but that's really about it. But as a game master, I've taken a different tact because people surf phones all the time. Beth, you surf phones
a
lot.
I do.
I do not interact with you if you're on a phone. And what I mean by that is, that's a really bad offender on this. Let's say Beth is on a phone and you, John, are not, and Pat, you are not. And we're having this in-character conversation. It's the king of the city. And he's like, Beth, you will go and save this. And I will, John, I will give you this. And Pat, I'll give you this. And then you guys are asking questions. And suddenly Beth is on a phone. Suddenly the king stops talking to her. And the king only talks to you two.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's say the king turns into a monster. Ha ha, I'm really the bad guy and I'm going to attack you. Beth's like, oh, well, I roll my initiative and I attack. Okay, and you do that and you do that and you do that. Okay, it's fine. And then Beth doesn't really like combat, so she's back on her phone. The king never attacks Beth. Never attacks her. Beth never attacks him. We're only doing combat with you two. And we're fighting you.
Mm-hmm.
And sorry to pick on you, Beth, but it's everybody.
No, it's fine. Pat tells me this all the time.
Yeah, well, and Pat's on the phone all the time, and I used to be guilty of it, and I'm really trying to get away from it. Dawn is on it all the time. Everybody, except Wayne. Wayne really doesn't do it.
Wayne's pretty good.
Yeah.
I was better before.
Right before I left. She brought the little tablet down. It was come on, Dawn.
Yeah, and like I said, I've changed how I've GM'd. If you are on a tablet or a phone, then I just don't interact with you. I'm not going to say, you don't want to interact with my game, and I'm so butthurt, but... Obviously, you're not engaged right now.
No, I think
well,
that's fair.
I'm not going to reach out and engage with you. Maybe we'll come back around.
That makes it kind of like school.
Yeah.
So do you have something that you want to share with the entire class?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, do you punish your players? I'm not player cop. I don't make you be in character and I don't make you do anything. I don't want to fill that role and I shouldn't have to fill that role. And you should resent it if I do. And, you know, we're all adults, but I see it as resource expenditure. And to me, the analogy, it's resource expenditure and games are about spotlight. And so I put the spotlight on players and I try to balance the spotlight amongst all the players and then give the spotlight to the team. Somebody's not interested, why am I going to waste the resources putting the spotlight on them? I'll put the spotlight on players who are. And that doesn't mean like, oh, well, they were surfing the phone for 30 minutes, 20 minutes ago, so I'm just going to ignore them. You put the phone away, you're engaged again. Guess where the spotlight goes? It comes right on back because you got to reward that. You got to reward engagement. You can't be passive-aggressive douche about it.
I've cultivated this fantasy of bringing like a big black rotary phone to a game table. Just picking up and dialing it. Oh my God. And be like, I don't care about your game, man.
Hello, so Facebook?
Yeah.
I would wow.
Operator,
so
please connect me to the Twitter.
That's awesome.
I've got some tweets.
I would pay so much money if you did that and videoed it. I would so want to see
totally
that.
You know that, but since you mentioned it, that is something that is really, it's gotten bad now just because of the technology that we have. This was not an issue when I first started role playing, obviously at all, because we didn't have smartphones. We barely had cell phones when I was...
Yeah, you put them in a duffel bag.
Yeah, well, actually, when I started role-playing, which was in high school, portable telephone was the thing that you had that was in the case, like a small briefcase.
The brick in a bag.
That was the brick in a bag, you know, that you, mm-hmm. yeah, like your dad had. Yeah. That was it. I didn't have a cell phone in high school.
I had a Nokia,
and as you've gone through, school. You know, so you didn't deal with that back then, awesome. So you might have been distracted on something else. But, you know, it was not so easily accessible. I think that's something that we really struggle with these days. Yeah. And it's only going to get worse because, you know, in 10 years, we're going to have the f-ing ocular implants where we don't even have to have that. And I'll just be surfing I'll be surfing Tumblr and you won't even know it.
You won't.
Well, you'll know it
Tumblr.
Because I'll be drooling. But
you'll be surfing your DeviantArt channels and you'll have a visible erection.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, and I've actually seen it in outside of role playing. I've seen it in my life, you know.
Oh,
it's just like
sure.
I've gone to dinner with people and I'm in mid sentence and suddenly they're looking down and they're on their phone.
Yeah.
And I know I've done it to people too. And the thing is that I refuse to turn into the guy who's like, I hate cell phones. I hate it when people surf Facebook. I hate it. It's like, you know what? Other people's actions don't piss me off. Or at least I try to make it to where other people's actions don't make me mad.
I'll be more open about not liking it. I would love to have a game where everyone just threw their cell phone in a bin and then picked it up when we were...
I read an article that, and forgive me, I am not a neurobiologist or a neuroscientist, so...
Well, then
But Phil is.
I will call him and have him explain it to me. But it stimulates some part of our brain, like the pleasure center in our brain, so we're like rats hitting the bar for the cheese.
Yeah, we are.
So... we can't put the phone down. The smartphone has modified our brain such that we keep hitting it. Mm-hmm. And I see that with myself. I'll put it away and I'll find my fingers moving towards it. It's like an addiction. I think I need a 12-step.
I have made a decision in my life of I refuse to talk to the tops of people's heads. If somebody's head is down and they're on their cell phone, I'm not going to talk to the top of their head. I'll finish my sentence and then I'll just stop. And I've done it as a social experiment, actually, where I've been engaging with people and then they stop and then they're on their cell phone and I just stop mid-sentence and I don't like stare at them, glare at them, you know, like, ooh, this hate, because I don't have that hate. I don't. I really, it doesn't make me mad because I do it and I don't get angry at it. And I just stop and I continue eating my meal and I wait to see if they noticed. And you know what?
People don't
notice.
Yeah, it's interesting. And
so John he made this postulation of, man, do you guys really wish you live in a cyberpunk world? And we're like, well, what do you mean? And he started listing these things and we're like, John, these things exist now in abundance. He's like, well, you know, always on computing and this engagement over the internet and these big buildings filled with lights where people are on computers all the time. I'm like, John,
yeah,
that's my job. That's what I do for a living.
I was trolling.
Yes.
So the moral of the story is before you come in and have people sit at the table, make them put their cell phone in a box.
Well, let me ask you that. Well, no.
Jammer.
Well, yeah. Wait a minute. Let
or
me
cell jammer.
Phone. Let
a
me
campaign setting with spaceship hamsters.
Let me seriously ask you guys that question because I've run for you all. John, you are unfortunately not in our current game, but you are always a member of this group.
Very sad. Mm-hmm. You're always in our heart.
Tell you that
I need a paycheck.
I understand.
Right. Let me ask you guys this. I'm the GM. I'm running a current game. GM generally sets the social rules of the game, not just the, you know, I'm rolling combat dice rules. What would you guys do Seriously now, not just because of this conversation. If I came down and I say, okay, guys, I'm running this game and I am doing a no cell phone policy.
I'd be fine
All
with that.
Cell phones need to be put in airplane mode.
I'd be happy.
Because the temptation to check it is too great. No laptops, no tablets, all cell phones in airplane mode. Unless there's some sort of emergency your mom is going to call because she has a hernia operation. Which there never is.
Yeah, the only reason I would want to have a cell phone is if we were not at our house and somebody was watching the kids. I'm going to probably start imposing that rule on myself because I am on my phone too much. Mm-hmm. That was a very astute observation, and I need to not be.
Mm-hmm. When you show up to a TTRPG with your tablet and play on it the whole time, that's a slap in the face to the entire enterprise.
Looks like you could have stayed home and done that.
Yeah.
Well,
why are you even here?
Or does it point to a greater problem for that player? See, and that's why it doesn't make me mad, because it's just like, what's the greater reason here? What's the real reason? Is it the lack of engagement because what is going on for that individual person? Are they not getting what they need? Are they not getting what they want? Or is
it... Well, how the hell are they going to get it if they never look up and pay attention to what's going on?
I do agree with that.
That's a fair assessment.
I agree with that. On that note...
Yeah, I think we've had a good discussion here. It was fun.
It kind of went to a couple different subjects.
It did, yeah. It was meandering.
We got very philosophical.
I think we'll wrap this one up.
That's right. Kill your cell phone. Listen to Fear the Boot and then destroy it.
Yes.
Exactly. That is what
you put
that
it
is
in
what
a box.
That's what we have got out of this.
No, you put it in a box and then you get it back out when you're done.
But you cut a hole in the box first, Beth.
Oh.
I forget about that. Thank you guys. Have a good week and we'll catch you next time. See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.